Okay, just gotta turn this on. Okay, all right. Hey, look. All right, I've detected an episode. Finally. I've been using this thing for so long, I couldn't find one. Welcome, everybody, to a brand new episode of A Place in Time, the official podcast of the North Canton Heritage Society. I'm your host, Kevin H. Woodside, but today, your host will actually be Doug Wechter, as he had a chance to sit down with Scott Brown, a local metal detecting enthusiast, to discuss the history beneath our feet. Take it away, Doug.
This is Doug Wechter, Vice President of the North Canton Heritage Society. I'm here with Scott Brown, who I met last year, or actually the year before. We were at a luncheon with your mother, Jane Miller, who graduated from North Canton in what year?
I'm going to guess 49.
49. Her brother was Dick Miller, who I believe the baseball field is named after. He was a groundskeeper when I grew up and went to Hoover myself. So did you go to Hoover?
Went to Hoover High School and graduated in 71.
All right. Excellent. And you grew up near one of the houses that we're going to talk about today. What a lot of people know is the Logan House, but we're getting a little ahead of ourselves. So you have a hobby of metal detecting. How did you kind of get interested in that hobby?
Well, my dad in around 1984 bought a metal detector only because he thought he might be interested in metal detecting. And I borrowed it. And I used it for maybe a couple of weeks and then kind of grew away from it for whatever reason. And then in 1987, because my wife knew that I had enjoyed it, bought me a metal detector, bought me my first metal detector. And from that, from then on, I mean, since 1987 about, I've been doing nothing but metal detecting in my free time.
Great, great. So in your hobby of metal detecting, you've met some different people online or in person, enthusiasts. You guys kind of collaborate with one another?
Yes, mostly on Facebook. There are guys that have Facebook pages dedicated to metal detecting where they show their finds, or other people submit their finds online, and there's some discussion about it. Just a very nice group of folks who enjoy the same hobby.
So you're sharing items that you found just to say, hey, look at this cool thing I found, and or maybe, hey, I found this, I don't know what it is.
Both, yes.
Okay.
A lot of folks finding items that they have no clue what it is. And fortunately, because there are thousands of subscribers, somebody invariably will know what it is.
Nice, nice. Well, I wanted to try and wrap our discussion today around your experiences in North Canton, since you're from North Canton and you have a emotional tie here, with some of your experiences of metal detecting in town. And you've had the opportunity within the last several years to look at some historical homes in town. For instance, you're at the what's known as the Logan House, I referred to earlier. The current owners are Patrick and Lisa Groh. And you've been there several times, and you grew up near the house.
Yeah, we grew up right next door. And because of the proximity to it, I knew a little bit of the history of it, that it was a historical place. And felt that if I contacted those folks, that they may be more inclined to allow me to metal detect it because I did live next door, and that I had some sort of connection to it because I had been there and played with the Logan children.
Right.
Yeah.
So the history goes back to, like I said, 1826. Adam Hauer built this house. It was a farm. And There's still a spring house there?
Yes, there's still a spring house. I don't know if it's still functioning or not, because it was locked up. I'm sure for insurance reasons, but yeah, I didn't see any water emanating from it, you know, like a stream anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure if it's still working. Perhaps the disruption building the new school might have interrupted that, because the new school is on a higher level than where the spring would be.
So since it was a farm, there probably was a barn there one time.
Yes, there was a barn in the area where the swimming pool is located, and it burned down. My mother has a little recollection of it, and one of the items that I found was an old fire nozzle.
So that might have been from the actual fire. That
more than likely, because you usually don't find those on farms or homesteads without there being some sort of connection to the fire department. And it is an old nozzle that it's hard to explain. It was brass, but it's very unique looking and quite indicative of the time.
So that's part of the interesting thing about your hobby. You never know what you're going to find. Mm-hmm. So in this case, you might have found an item that is related to a specific historical event, especially for the homeowners, of a barn that burned down, and also a nozzle that was used by the local fire department.
Yes.
Wow.
My guess is that was probably from when it was New Berlin.
Wow. Excellent. Did you find anything else that you recall from that property?
There was an artillery shell we found there, and a Indian head penny. And I'm not real certain of some of the other items, because they were probably a little more unremarkable and more common. Maybe a few wheat pennies, but definitely some newer coins. And I believe probably some matchbox cars.
Okay. And you said you had been to that property maybe five or six times?
Five or six times, yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second property we wanted to talk about is the 1820 Leonard Williman home. Current owners are Doug and Amy Lane. They were gracious enough to let you metal detect there also.
Mm-hmm.
And Amy, incidentally, grew up there. Her last name was Lundstrom. Her father being Don Lundstrom, who had created three local sculptures in town, did some excellent work there. So tell me a little bit about your experience at the Leonard Williman house.
It was a little tedious to metal detect. There was a lot of electromagnetic interference. Not sure where it was coming from. Some of it was perhaps from the dog fence, the electric dog fence, and he did turn that off, and some of the interference went away, but there was still a lot of interference. So we found, I think, maybe a few modern coins and an axe head, but I would like to go back at some point in time. I do have a special button, if you will, on my metal detector that will kind of tune out and get rid of some of the interference, and I think I'll use that if I'm invited back again.
Nice. So you only have been to that property once. So do you often or try to go back to a property more than once, and if so, how does that work, or why would you do that?
Most properties are large enough that one time, even if it's for 4 or 5 hours of metal detecting time, to not find everything that could be there. The ground does move. The ground changes in humidity or moisture content, and so you get different sorts of readings on the metal detector. So it actually does take 2, 3, maybe sometimes 4 times to find anything that might be a relic or of interest.
So you go back during different times of the year?
Yes.
So the ground can be different?
Yes. That's always my plan, is to ask the homeowner if I can return at some other time. I'll even take my second detector along. Sometimes it detects a little differently than the one that I mainly use. And just those minor changes is sometimes enough to retrieve items that normally, you know, wouldn't be found.
So, Scott, you do this as a hobby, but do you charge people for your services? And what do you do with the objects that you find?
I absolutely do not charge. If they need a property marker found, I do that for free. If they lost jewelry or any sort of service that might require a metal detector, I do that because I love the hobby and I do like to help people.
Now, I think you mentioned that you don't charge anyone.
Oh, and any items that I find, of course, they're the homeowners. I like to see items that are lost either returned to the homeowner or one of their relatives. And if it's of historical value and they don't want it, then I'd like to give it to the historical society that's in the area.
So you've probably found a lot of interesting things over the years, which maybe we can touch on in a different podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Because you've been doing this for almost 40 years.
Yes.
Let's jump to real quick, because you mentioned if someone might request you to find jewelry or something.
Mm-hmm.
You told me earlier that you had found a class ring of a student from North Canton. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yes. I had found a different ring for another person and posted it online. And John Schick contacted me because he saw the information that was posted, and I believe it was probably on my Facebook page, and he contacted me and said, hey, do you think you can find my ring? I think I can gain access to the house where I lost it years ago. In fact, I think it was 1967.
Okay.
He lost it. And I said, sure, I'd love to do that for you. Not knowing that he graduated from the same high school and that was 4 years earlier than I had graduated.
Wow.
From Hoover High School. And we've ended up being buddies and text and talked to each other on the phone ever since. But we were able to gain access to the home, and I spent probably a half hour, 45 minutes looking for it. We didn't find it. And I was about ready to give up, and as I was walking back towards the house, closer to the house, my metal detector made the, indicative sign that there was something in the ground, and I dug it, and it was John's ring.
Wow.
And, he was so happy, he was so thrilled, he actually cried.
So something very, very precious to him.
Yes, very precious to him. Somehow someone I think they contacted Fox 8 News and a reporter came down and, we were on TV.
Wow. Well, speaking of, media coverage, we'll talk about our last, historic property metal detected in North Canton. We're sitting in the basement of that now, the 1841 Ezra and Catherine Pebble House. I am the owner of this property. I grew up here, family from, in 1968, so we have a lot of family memories. And as we found out from Scott, we have a lot of things we left around the yard, as well as some of the prior inhabitants. You've been at this property how many times last year?
11 times.
11 times.
Yes.
Wow.
Which is very unusual because... normally, I don't go to a place more than maybe 2 or 3 times unless it's a farm field, and then I could, be there 20, 30 times and it not bother anybody or hurt anything. But this is just very unusual for this house. To me, being almost in the middle of North Canton and having all these relics in the ground, it's just mind-boggling to me because this just doesn't happen.
So you found, to date, probably over 150 items, which is a lot more than you found at the other properties. And like you said, there's a vast variety of things, not just coins, but we have a lot of like clothing items. You found a bracelet. You found a button from 1810 to 1820 age range. A toe tap. You found two suspender clips, both from the 19th century, and one you found recently you think was made in England?
Yes, because you can actually read the name on it. It says Peabody Brace, and brace is the term that the English used for a clip, like a suspender clip.
So why would they have a suspender clip made in England, do you think, from the early 1800s?
The United States didn't have the capacity in the early 1800s to make buttons and other things of brass and bronze, such as a suspender clip as well. And so they bought them from England.
Excellent. I know you found a watch and earrings and also a variety of wheat pennies with two holes in them in various locations in the yard. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Well, actually, it was in the side yard, and they were probably all within maybe 15 to 20 feet of each other.
Okay.
So somehow they got moved around, or they moved while in the soil. And it just seems to be indicative of the time, because they were wheat pennies. And they were probably drilled with holes to make a bracelet out of.
Okay.
We do have information online that that was a common thing to do back at that time. They could be a part of a toy, but because of the quantity of pennies, it was more likely not made as a whizzer, it was called, because those used a single coin. And so I don't believe there would be any reason to have multiple coins like that as spinners. It was probably made into a bracelet.
So staying on the theme of the vast variety of objects you found, again, we found some household items, such as an 1897 spoon. There was also a fluorescent face powder, a little tin from 1912 to 1928 era. Another thing I found fascinating was the 1800s brass harmonica reed plates. So maybe how they entertained themselves. And another one of my favorites is the cast iron hitching post ring that was found near Portage. Now, what would that use before?
Well, actually, I think it was a used for the harness as a reins guide, and it would attach to the horse's collar, and the reins would go through that and keep them from hitting the horse, because a lot of the horses were what were called reins trained, where you just place the reins on the right side, told the horse to go to the left. Instead of yanking and pulling them by the bit, they would be reins trained. And this would actually just keep the reins from hitting the horse or any other animal, as far as that's concerned.
Another fascinating item that you found, to tell a little bit about the people that lived here, is the 1940s blue hole souvenir token from, what, the Sandusky area?
Yes, near the Sandusky area.
So all these pieces together, the vast quantity and variety, I think, in my opinion, help tell the story of the individuals that lived here or maybe visited here over almost 200 years. It's just an amazing, and think about it, you know, maybe they were, when they were lost, how, you know, frustrating that was for the person.
And I also found a very large quantity of matchbook cars or Tootsie toy cars that show a range of years where children played, and it was all in the same area. So, you know, pre-1940s all the way up to the 60s and 70s, perhaps maybe even 80s, children played on the one side of the house near where the water was.
I find that fascinating myself because, as I mentioned, I moved here at the age of 2 in 1968. I had 3 siblings, and we did have a sandbox over in that area. And you found, I want to say, about 20 different cars or
probably
more.
Probably 20 or more, yeah.
And as you mentioned, some of them predate us, which I think is fascinating. They had that same location of playing. And I was trying to figure out my siblings, I mean, were we playing with the cars or were we just chucking them at each other? Because there were so many that were just found strewn across the yard in that area.
Well, and also in that same area, there were aluminum toy spoons and forks of a very small nature. So, you know, we know they were toys. And that was in the same area as the cars.
Wow. So the plan is for you to come back more this year in 2025 and do some more metal detecting and see what else you can find. Like you said, different times of the year. You haven't been out here in the spring yet, so the ground shifts over the winter time and freezing and thawing. So
yes.
I'm anxious to see what you can find, as well as my 3 siblings. We're on a text thread. Every time you come out here, we send out pictures of what you found, and they get all excited. And I think definitely people from the community, and I have these displayed, some of the items in the shadow boxes here, enjoy stuff that you found here. And we want to say thank you for all your effort and time, and again, this is all donated labor on your part and research of all the joy that you've given us through what you've done so far and what you might do in the future. So thank you.
Well, it's my pleasure. I enjoy doing it, and I enjoy even more so seeing people who are very appreciative of what I do, and feel very good about collecting these items and displaying them. And I do look forward to the spring because I can be in an area now where trees have been taken down and it has the weeds have been squashed down so that I can move my detector better over the areas where I previously couldn't metal detect.
Awesome. Well, thanks again, and we look forward to your future finds.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
Thank you for joining us today for a brand new episode of A Place in Time, official podcast of the North Canton Heritage Society. I've been your host, Kevin H. Woodside. Thanks to our special host today, Doug Wechter, and our guest, Scott Brown. Music today was provided by Blue Dot Sessions and was downloaded from freemusicarchive.com. This is a free-use, royalty-free audio website. If you like some of the music featured in today's episode, I highly recommend checking out Blue Dot Sessions' newest albums, Fretwork, Greenfire, and Turnip. Sound effects were provided by freesound.org and was designed by Amazing Brick Movies. This is a free-use, royalty-free audio website. If you have any questions, comments, corrections, or concerns, please contact us at nchspod@gmail.com. A Place in Time is a presentation of the North Canton Heritage Society. The views, opinions, and comments made by the host, co-host, or their guest are their own, and do not necessarily reflect those of the North Canton Heritage Society. The North Canton Heritage Society is a nonprofit 501c3 corporation funded through memberships and the generosity of donations from businesses and the community. Our mission is to connect people with the past by collecting, preserving, and sharing our history and heritage. If you would like to become a member, please visit our website, our social media sites, or stop by Tuesdays and Thursdays, 10 to 2. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you around town.